Hello and welcome to Up the Smut Podcast, where we discuss all things smutty and slutty, depending on the day. I'm your hostess, Kate, of Romantically Inclined Reviews, and my co-host, Michaela, is still in bed. She's been there about 2 weeks. She was on the mend from her COVID bout when she got hit with a second wave that has kept her basically bedridden. So I have been doing things myself, which is totally fine and not at all wildly uncomfortable for me. I used to record the podcast on my own, but I found that I work a lot better with someone to banter with, because otherwise it's just me bantering to myself. And I'm just not that great of a conversationalist, I'm going to be honest. So bear with me. I was going to do monster romances today, but I decided no. You know what? That is a conversation that deserves a co-host. So I'm having a special guest come on for next week's episode. And today I decided instead to bring you guys a topic that I feel very, very strongly about. And that is, don't fuck people you work with. Don't do it. It's a terrible idea. And here's why. One time, I was living in a dorm, and I didn't work in the dorm. I didn't work there, but I lived there. So it's almost the same thing. Don't shit where you eat, basically, or where you sleep. Don't shit where you sleep. Do you want to sleep in a shitty bed? No, you do not. I spent a lot of time flirting with the guy at the front desk. In my mind, it was kind of like, he's kind of out of my league. We'll never do anything. It's just like fun to flirt with a guy when you walk into your building and you're drunk, you know? Unfortunately, those feelings ended up being reciprocated. And the minute he asked me out, I panicked. I thought, wow, this is actually a really terrible idea, because he literally works like 6 days a week, providing access to my living space, which is, one, not super safe for a freshman female in college to like get in that sort of situation. And two, it's just not really like, even if it went well, now I got to see him 6 days a week. Like, that's not my vibe. I'm not someone who wants to spend every waking moment of their life with their significant other. My husband is downstairs gaming right now. I'm fine with that. I prefer it that way. Spend like 3 hours a day together. I would like to spend an additional 3 hours reading by myself in the silence of the world on my couch that my kid peed on tonight. Ugh. That was my own fault. I was letting him watch a show with nothing but a towel on. And in my head, I was like, why would you ever pee on the couch? But I forgot he's not even 2 years old yet. He does not have that thought process. He was just like, I have to pee. I'm going to pee now. So he peed on my couch. So now my safe space has pee on it. Don't pee where you sit. Anyways, so I ended up making up an excuse about how I was getting back together with my ex-boyfriend. I did end up getting back together with my ex-boyfriend. I like to think it was not because I was trying to simply avoid this man. I did then date my ex-boyfriend for an additional like 16 months. But I'm not ruling it out either. So I also once was working the front desk, or not the front desk, the checking station of the dining hall. And I had an actual boyfriend at this point who later became my husband. And I was a senior, and a freshman football player asked me out. And then I had to see him every single day for the rest of the year after turning him down, which he was like great about it. Like, but it's still super awkward when I'm like, one, you're a baby, but you're also enormous because you're a football player. But two, now I have to swipe your card like twice a day. It's not really a good time to then just like have to stare into the eyes of somebody you turned down for like 150 more days. So anyways, those are my, I don't know. I'm pretty strongly against fucking people you work with. So that's as close as I've ever gotten. And it really wasn't that close. But I know a lot of you have. And I know a lot of you are probably married to people you fucked while you were working with them. And that is fine. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes it absolutely does not, though. But today we're going to talk about the times that it worked out, because obviously this is a romance novel podcast. We're here for the HEAs. So I'm about to drop, like, I don't even know. I have 3 pages. So if you hear me ruffling pages, it's because I am ruffling pages, because I took a bunch of notes. I have 3 pages worth of recommendations for you guys about people who fucked where they worked and it worked the fuck out. That was pretty good. I didn't write that down. That just came to me while I was sitting here. Okay. You guys know the drill. I'm about to rattle off a bunch of recommendations to you. If you hear one you like and I said the name and then you forgot the name, the names are always then written on the Instagram post about this episode. So you can always head there and just scroll through and see what you missed. But I will do my best to repeat the names for you multiple times, as has been requested by some of you lovely people. And I don't always remember, but I try. Okay. This is a mix of all subgenres, multiple other types of tropes, different types of characters, lengths. Some of these are novellas, some of these are full length, some of these are series. So you're in for like a whirlwind. As always, I may repeat things that I have mentioned in previous episodes. Not everybody listens to every episode, so I don't feel too bad doing that. But I'm also not going to go into super, super great detail on any of these books, just because I don't want to spoil it, one. And two, you might have already heard about this book before. And I don't want to just waste your time. So let's get started. Book number one is Window Shopping by Tessa Bailey. Some people do not like when characters have wild jobs that make no sense. Tessa Bailey is so good at picking just the weirdest jobs for her heroes and heroines, or just like very, very specific jobs where you're like, I don't think you can make a living off of that. Like Georgie in Fix It Up, Fix Her Up, when she is a party clown. And she buys a house in like a really high cost of living area. A lot of people have a problem with that. I'm not here for the realism, okay? I'm not going to look up what a party clown makes in an average party in their life, like their salary. I'm not going to waste my time Googling that. I'm just going to pretend she's so good that people pay her a buttfuck a lot of money. And in this story, we have Stella. Stella's the heroine. This is a grumpy sunshine where the heroine is grumpy. Stella has just gotten out of prison. She is an ex-con. She is a felon. It was not a situation in which it was like a case of mistaken identity and this poor innocent girl was locked up. No, she did. It was a shitty circumstances, but she does deserve to be in prison for what she did. But she is incredibly grumpy. She doesn't have a job, and she's walking down, whatever, is this New York? I don't fucking pay attention to the settings very much. And she spies, like, this, basically, like, Macy's, like, their big window displays, where they're, like, trying to lure you in by putting all their best shit in the window. Then, like, you go in, and it's not that great. That is a store near me called Clio. Stuff in the window, great. You go in, it's like walking into your grandma's closet. I'm like, what the fuck is happening here? That is the work of a great window decorator. So Stella ends up falling into this job as a window decorator because Aiden, the CEO, with a cute bubble butt, who always wears bow ties and is super sunshiny and happy all the time, sees something in her. So he's like, guess what? You are now my window decorator. How much do you think a window decorator makes? I don't know. It can't be that much, right? I mean, I guess it's got to be a full-time job, but they could also probably get like an intern to do it. So I don't know. But the two of them kind of like butt heads over designs and people not really wanting Stella there because they find out her background. And Aiden, it turns out, is kind of like forcing himself to be happy all the time. And she kind of helps him figure out that, hey, it's okay to be grumpy every once in a while. No one expects you to be happy all the time. So it's like a nice little balance between the two of them. And it's short. I don't know. What is a novella actually? Is there like specific page lengths that determine, like, I consider anything like under 300 pages to basically be a novella. 300 is like the cap for me, or like the border, where I'm like, over 300, full length book. Under 300, novella. Under 100, novella. It's the novella of a novella. Okay, but anyways, it's basically a novella. It's cute though. It's like holiday theme too. It takes place around Christmas, so if you're into that. But obviously with Tessa Bailey, you're going to get like over the top, dramatic sex, lots of dirty talking. Not everyone's cup of tea, especially because the plot will be pretty rushed because it is a novella. So you go from like strangers meeting to strangers fucking to strangers like vowing their everlasting love for each other within like 200 pages. That's just how Tessa Bailey rolls. If you don't like it, that's okay. I like it. All right, let's go into, and I'm mentioning this on this podcast because Michaela's not here. So if she was on this podcast episode, she would probably be screeching right now. I have two books by author Eve Casey, and that's Casey with a K. The first is, well, actually, this is the second book in the series, but I read it first, Fighting Gravity. And it is Michaela's worst nightmare. It is basically an Elon Musk fan fiction. But like this, it came out before it turned out Elon Musk was like super Looney Tunes. This was back when, you know, he was kind of cringy, but everyone was just like, oh, he's a billionaire trying to do cool stuff. I don't know. And it follows Rosie. Rosie is the heroine. She is an architect. She, after being horribly betrayed by an ex-boyfriend, starts her own architecture firm. And she, this is like, if you're looking for like a broken heroine who can trust nobody, that's Rosie. She has no interest in trusting a man ever again. She's like, I'm fucking done. That's how bad the betrayal was. She gets hired as a hotel designer for Tate. Do you know any billionaires named Tate? It's a very interesting name. Tate is in the space tourism business. So he is a billionaire, and it's kind of like his whole family are billionaires. That's what they do. They have all sorts of hands in pots all over the place. But his passion project is like a SpaceX situation called Orbital, which is just space tourism. So he's working on that. He's super cinnamon roll though. So if you're looking for like an alpha billionaire who just like dominates the heroine and, you know, just cocky as all get out, that's not really Tate. Tate is super sweet. Very, very cinnamon. I don't remember too much about the plot. I know that there's a lot of drama. There's a lot of like angst. There's a lot going on. It's a pretty long book. And in my review, I did mention that like I felt that the book was interesting enough without the excess drama, but I also wasn't turned off by the drama because I do like drama. But just know that it's not, while he is a cinnamon roll, you know, obviously she's not trusting men and he's going to do his best to fix that, but there's going to be some push and pull back and forth there. So then there is The Frequency of Attraction by Eve Casey. This follows Quinn, and I believe Quinn is related to Tate. I think she's one of like the billionaires. And she works in PR for the family, the like group that they operate that has all their different pet projects under it. She has never orgasmed. And that is what I mostly remember. I mean, I liked her character, but I remember thinking like, fuck yeah. I love the first orgasm kind of book where the heroine, I don't even know if she's managed to do it by herself. I think she might have managed to do it by herself, but never with a man. Enter Vadim. Vadim is an astronaut. He is all tatted up. He's a super bad boy. And he has no interest in like a family or settling down. He is fully committed to his work and hooking up. So he's a failed astronaut. I'm not really sure. This is like his last chance to go into space, basically. And he desperately is clinging to that. And he meets Quinn, and she, for some reason, I can't remember how it comes up, confesses that she's never had an orgasm with a man. What makes this book special, though, is that Vadim does not manage to give her an orgasm for like the first few times they hook up. This is not a magic dick fixes all situation. This is a book in which the hero has to practice and learn her cues and learn what she likes to make it happen for her. So he like commits to helping her achieve her first orgasm with a man. And I thought that that was the only time I've read that, honestly. I think it's still the only time I've read it. And I read this book like a year or so ago, where the heroine has never orgasmed before, and the hero doesn't like immediately make it happen for her. So if you want that kind of plot, it was very hot and yeah, very unique. So both those books, fucking at work. Then of course, I am going to mention Burn for Me by Alona Andrews. And for those who don't know, Alona Andrews is a husband-wife duo. A lot of people don't know that. And so they'll just refer to Alona Andrews as a she, but it's a they. They are a husband and wife working together to write these books. And I've talked about this book a lot, probably on like 6 of the different episodes, so I'm not going to go too deep into it. But basically, Nevada is the heroine. She is a private investigator in a world in which like magic exists. I kind of consider it to be like an adult Harry Potter world in a sense. Some people are magical, some people are not. They live in a world where like, you know, the magic houses are very powerful. Everybody has different powers though. So like not everybody is just magical in the same way. Some people control the weather. Some people are truth tellers or truth whatever seekers. Some people are telepaths. Some people can communicate more with like plants and are really good at that kind of thing. So it's all over the board. I just love the world. But Nevada is a private investigator who's kind of strong-armed by her boss into taking on a very dangerous case. Also on the case is Mad Rogan. Mad Rogan is an incredibly powerful telepath billionaire. He is quite possibly the most powerful person in existence at this time, and everybody is terrified of him. And he decides he and Nevada are going to work together to track down this person she is trying to track down, because he has his reasons for doing it. She's going to lose her job and her home if she doesn't find this guy. So they're kind of working together, but they're also kind of not. Like, Nevada does not trust him. Mad Rogan does not really trust her. So I consider it working together, though, because they are working together to catch this bad guy. It is a 3-book series. It is a definite slow burn. They, I think, kiss at the end of book 1. It is probably the slowest burn I've ever read without genuinely having no on-screen anything or on-page anything, but it is totally worth it. I highly recommend it. I cannot recommend it more. Every time I talk about it, I want to read it again. So I'll just leave it there. Oh boy. Okay, we're getting into a couple MMs here. I read a lot of queer romance, and a lot of it is work-related, so that's fun. So first off, we have Getting Friendly by Saxon James. This is a series that I have kind of a, not necessarily a love-hate relationship with, but all these books are rated a pretty solid like 4-star from me. So none of these like swept me away necessarily, but they're good enough that I keep reading them. So that's just some honesty for you here. I like them enough to keep reading them. I'm not losing my mind gaga over them. So, but this one was really cute. So this one is about Leon. Leon is an older, I think he's like in his 30s, maybe even early 40s, construction worker. Well, he owns a construction company. He's not just a construction worker. And he's doing really, really well for himself. And he is looking for an apprentice or like an assistant. And he meets Augie. Augie is a tiny little thing, super clumsy. He has no idea why he would want to work in construction, yet Augie's resume is like impeccable. It has so much construction work that it's unbelievable, because Augie's dad is Leon's like competition in a sense. They both compete for a lot of the same contracts. But Augie's dad has decided that Augie is not cut out for the business. So he kind of cuts him off and he's like, you're not working for me anymore. And I'm going to make sure you don't work for anybody else either. You need to get a different type of job. This isn't for you. So of course, Augie goes to Leon. Leon says no at first. Augie and him kind of friendly connect at a gay bar. And Leon decides, I'm going to give him a chance. The whole book is basically like, well, there's a pretty big size difference, which I know a lot of you are huge fans of. I am. And yeah, it's just a lot of fighting the urge to be with one another. Like, Augie really needs this job to prove himself to his shitty dad. Leon is, like, vying for this really important contract and really doesn't have time to be distracted. Plus, he likes hard, fast, intense fucks. And he's like, if I do that with Augie, I'll break him. Which, who doesn't love that trope? So, yeah. It is cute. Oh, man, though. This one, is it? Okay, so this one's kind of interesting. It's called Becoming Bennett by Cora Rose and Nicole Dykes. They occasionally team up to write some books, and this is a series that they co-write together about cam boys. So it's like they're working together, but also sex is their work, which adds like an extra level into, I don't know, the whole premise of like working together. Like, you don't want to develop feelings because this person, like, your careers kind of rely on each other to, I don't know, fucking make money. So they fuck a lot on camera, but at the same time, they have to, like, not fall for each other because that could fuck everything up. I said fuck a lot. So in this book, also, I just want to point out, I have said this before, Cora Rose writes very over-the-top books, purposefully over-the-top. You are going to get some trope-tastic writing where, like, she does what it takes to make the trope happen. Even if you're kind of, like, rolling your eyes, you're also, like, really fucking horny about it, so... I just like to put that out there. In this book, you have Bennett. Bennett is a sweet Midwestern boy. Totally, like, he just exudes, like, strength, but, like, an innocence to him. He's huge. He's buff. He's gorgeous. But he just has that, like, Midwestern vibe that makes him a very, very popular person to subscribe to on their version of, like, OnlyFans. And then you have Jasper, and Jasper is a city boy through and through, wants nothing to do with farms, and he just hates Bennett. They fucked on camera once, and Bennett was so good that it made Jasper even more angry. Because he just, like, he wants to hate Bennett. It's one of those, like, he wants to hate Bennett, but he can't because Bennett's so damn nice. But he hates him even more for that. So... but in this, Bennett's mom has a stroke, and the only person who can really help Bennett right now is Jasper. And Jasper's not a dick. Like, he might groan whenever Bennett opens his mouth in more than one way, but he's not an asshole. So he helps Bennett, you know, he packs him up, flies home with him to small town Midwest, and helps him, like, get through this. And the whole time, they joined, like, a new site. So their friend started his own version of, like, OnlyFans, in a sense. And he wants them to record together. Like, he thinks, like, hey, everybody loved it the one time you guys did fuck. And even though you vowed never to fuck again, if you do it, it will bring so much to our site. Like, so many people will join our site. They will pour money into it. So they agree that they're going to tease people and fuck on this new site. So it's really funny because Jasper keeps using these teasing, like, trailers as a way to work out his, like, sexual aggression on Bennett. So he's like, we're only doing this because it's work. But then he's just, like, wants to be fucked so bad by Bennett. So it's cute because it was so... It's like the reader is being teased at the same time. Like, you might as well be watching this trailer. Like, it takes a while to get to, like, the full thing. But you're being teased by these, like, 30-second trailers, too. So I thought that was just a really, like, unique means of characters having sex. Like, it's work, but you can feel that it's more than work while you're reading it. Anyways. Oh, it's interesting. I'm going to go right from that into, like, a really innocent book with, like, no on-page heat. So Whiplash. Oh, and again, that was the book Becoming Bennett by Cora Rose and Nicole Dykes. I'm going to do a better job of that. This is The Bodyguard by Catherine Center. You may have heard of it. I believe it is a movie or becoming a movie. It's a really interestingly written book. I can see why people really liked it, but I remember as I was reading it. So I can't remember if it's clean. I know people hate that term. it does not offend me when people call romance without on-page sex clean. I'm not one of those. I know it really bothers some people, but I just see it as like kind of – I don't see dirty as an insult or smutty as an insult. It's kind of like reclaiming the word bitch. Like, I'm just not bothered when people who understand the nuances of the romance genre and who respect the romance genre use the words clean or dirty to describe books. So I'm sorry if that does bother you. I have also heard it referred to as proper. That is by one specific publisher, though. So clean in this context is no on-page sex. They do kiss on page, and I believe that is it. I don't even know that I would call it fade to black, because there's a difference between clean and fade to black. Clean means no on-page sex. It's not even implied. Fade to black means, or closed door, means that there is sex on page, or there may be a lead up to sex on page, but then the door like slams in your face, and then the scene, next scene starts up, and like they, you know that they had sex. That is the difference between clean and closed door or fade to black. So they cannot be used interchangeably. So I believe The Bodyguard by Catherine Center is clean. It reads to me, it literally read like I was watching like a 90s sitcom or like a 90s rom-com where like the dialogue is just like a little bit weird. Like nobody would ever actually say it out loud. And I even wrote in my review that all the characters were basically caricatures. Like, I couldn't take anybody, no one seemed like a real person who ever lived. They all just seemed like a little bit ridiculous. Not a bad thing. It was consistent, but that's just the vibe I got while I was reading. I was kind of like, oh, this is a little bit interesting of a read. Hannah, the heroine, is a bodyguard who looks like a kindergarten teacher. So that's like her whole thing, though. She works for a company that supplies bodyguards who aren't supposed to look like bodyguards. And she has a really shitty ex-boyfriend who works for the same company. And she is assigned to Jake Stapleton. Jake is a movie star who has a corgi-owning stalker. So it's like, again, like I was saying, like everything's just a little bit strange. And Jake ends up getting called home. He doesn't want his family to know that he has a bodyguard. He doesn't want to worry them. So he asks Hannah to be his fake girlfriend. But Hannah does not look like the kind of woman who would be a movie star's girlfriend. Even her ex-boyfriend is very quick to point out that no one will ever believe it. She does not look sophisticated enough. She doesn't act sophisticated enough. Again, she looks and acts like a kindergarten teacher who could kick your ass. So you get like a fake dating aspect because she shows up and they kind of have to keep this charade going even though no one really believes it. And they're all very confused. But yeah, there's a little bit of like suspense in there as he is currently being stalked. But it was a sweet, funny read. Like the dialogue did make me laugh a lot. So, and funny enough, my next recommendation is also a bodyguard romance. So I guess I really like bodyguard romances. I think I actually have 3 or 4 bodyguard romances on here altogether. So this one is called Pop Star by Eden Finley. It is what I'm not a huge One Direction fan. I don't hate them. I just never really got into them. I was a little bit too old by the time they came around to really vibe with what they were putting out there into the world. And that said, I still think this series is supposed to be like a fan fiction of One Direction. Well, not fan fiction. That like, I mean, I have all the respect for fan fiction. I don't think it's supposed to be fan fiction. I think it is inspired by One Direction. So every book in the series is about a character of this boy band who just feels very, like each character kind of reminded me of a specific One Direction person. So in this one, in Pop Star, the main character's name is Harley. And so I obviously was like, well, this is Harry Styles in my head, even though the character on the cover of the book is not at all what I would picture a pop star to look like. So I kind of disregarded that. But I'm pretty sure he's Harry Styles. The book starts off where he kind of doesn't really take things seriously. I mean, he's very passionate about his work and everything, but he gets a lot of stalker mail and creepy stuff. And he just kind of brushes it off. But one day he gets home from a concert and there is an actual stalker in his home, has broken in. And so now he starts to take it seriously and he decides, okay, once that situation is rectified, he's like, I'm going to hire I need a bodyguard because that scared the shit out of him, rightfully. And he ends up hiring Bricks, which the names in this book, Hartley and Bricks, it's B-R-I-X. And I believe is a nickname, but I can't remember what it is a nickname for. Bricks is desperate for money. Again, I can't remember why he needs it. I think it's something family related. But he needs the work. His company doesn't usually do private security or private bodyguard kind of security. But again, Harley is willing to pay out the wazoo. So he's like, okay. He agrees to take the job. But he kind of comes into it with like a pop stars are spoiled brats. Harley doesn't take anything seriously. But as they get to know each other, Bricks begins to realize that his first assumptions of Harley are wrong, that Harley is very passionate about his work and takes it very seriously, even if he doesn't necessarily take his own safety seriously. And yeah, I don't know. There's a little bit of suspense in there because there is the stalker situation. So, you know, there's some instances of things happening, people following them, you know, safety concerns, alarms going off in the house. But I love that kind of suspense added to a book. I think that I love when not that this is the case in this book, but I love when the drama comes primarily from external sources. I am learning. I don't necessarily like the miscommunication trope. I think that's my issue with like Secret Baby too, is just like, I want them to be passionately in love with one another and I don't want anything to get in the way of that. But I also still want there to be some sort of drama. So I like when there's a stalker. I like when there's like they're solving a crime together because it just feels like they're madly in love. That is proven. There's no issues with them. Everything is coming from outside the relationship. So that's not necessarily the case in this book. There is some like internal back and forth as well. But that's why I just love suspense. I'll have to do a whole episode on all my romantic suspense books because I think it is absolutely my favorite trope. So, all right, let's get into Femdom. I've mentioned this book a couple times, but Preferential Treatment by Heather Guerre. It is a gem. It is such a fucking gem of a book. Heather Guerre took Mutually Beneficial out of publication, and that was the book where the landlord, the tenant heroine approaches the landlord asking for like a break in rent. And he says, if you fuck me, I'll give you a break in rent. And so she does. And I fucking love that book. I regret every day that I read it on KU and didn't purchase it because now it is out of publication. But this is technically the second book in the series. So you do get some mention of like previous characters. I don't think it affects the book like too much. I think they just pop in like once or twice. But if you end up reading it and you're like, why does it seem like I'm supposed to know who these two people are? That's why. But in Preferential Treatment, we're back to billionaires, baby. We have billionaire Mikhail. He is a founder and a CEO of a fucking intense company. The blurb says he's quite possibly the most wealthy man in the entire world. So he's very wealthy. But he doesn't have everything he wants, right? And so one day he is going through his work and Kate, a lowly human being on the totem pole of his company snaps at him. She has no idea who he is. She snaps at him. And he's like, now I have a boner. The fuck am I supposed to do about this? It turns out he is incredibly turned on by being dominated by a woman. And he offers Kate a deal she can't refuse because Kate has like kind of clawed her way up from poverty. And while she is making a decent wage right now, she has a lot of debts and she is really, every paycheck is kind of like the difference between living on the streets. She's just kind of breaking even right now. And he offers her a ton of money to come dominate him. And she's like, yeah, okay. I'm not going to say no to a bunch of money to put a billionaire in his place. This book is Michaela's dream. I am actually not sure if Michaela has read this. I've talked about it with her before, but I feel like if she hasn't read it, she absolutely needs to. And then we just have an entire episode about it so she can talk about what her fantasy of dominating a billionaire would be, which would probably involve some really, really terrible things happening to Elon Musk. Okay, but this is not that kind of podcast. We're not going to get into all the horrible things that billionaires would have happened to them if Michaela was in charge. It was a really hot book, though. There's a lot of edging. There's financial domination where she, like, takes a shit ton of his money and, like, goes on a shopping spree. And he's just popping a boner the entire time. Like, he's just, like, so fucking turned on by her spending his money. And I liked it because from what I remember, Kate doesn't, like, waffle too much about this. You know, like, normally the heroine's turning away his, like, black Amex. You know, she's like, no, I couldn't possibly spend your money. And, yeah, I'm kind of sick of that. He's a goddamn billionaire. You could go to, like, fucking Wall Street. Okay, Wall Street is not a place where you shop. I am not rich, obviously. My first instinct was to say Target. She could go to Target and buy everything in Target, and it wouldn't even make a dent in his whatever. So, yeah. But anyways, this book is fabulous. If you are into femdom, if you are into billionaires being financially dominated and forced to donate to Planned Parenthood, this is the book for you. All right. I have four more recommendations for you. So thank you so much for hanging in there. I hope you are taking notes. Yeah. I'm just making myself want to reread all these books. Actually, I have been wanting to reread Preferential Treatment for a long time, and I keep putting it off because I'm like, no, I can't keep going back to it. But then I keep going back to other books, so that doesn't really seem fair to Preferential Treatment. Let's move on to Partner Track by Kat Wynn, though. I believe I mentioned this in a recent podcast, but this is another great book about a badass boss bitch of a heroine. So Purdy is her name. She is a lawyer, and she's really fucking good at her job. But her personal life, like her home life, is a hot fucking mess. Girl lives in filth. She doesn't want to change. She's like 35 or 38 or something. Like, she's like, this is just how I live. So she's definitely not the kind of heroine who has everything together. She's great in her professional life, but her personal life is kind of like, meh. She likes like hanging out at home, doesn't have a shit ton of friends, messy house, takeout all the time, food expired in the fridge, that kind of vibe. And she has an amazing case or an amazing win on a case that's very important to her. She thinks she is going to make Partner. It's been her dream to make Partner. And her case was actually against Carter, this other popular lawyer. She's come up against him a couple times. They end up both stranded in the same place and they hook up. And this is like in the beginning of the book. Purdy returns home. She thinks she's going, like I said, she thinks she's going to be made Partner and finds out, no, instead of being made Partner after years of dedication and a fucking fantastic win, Carter is hired and made Partner by her firm. And literally taking the job out from under her. And Carter didn't know that that was happening. So Carter is a really nice guy, actually. He respects the hell out of Purdy. He is open and honest about his feelings, like from the get-go. He's like super into her. He's younger. I think he's like 32. And he just puts it all out there, like all the time. There's some really hot oral in the office. It's kind of like enemies to lovers because Purdy wants to burn him alive for stealing her job, basically. And he just wants to be with her. Like, he's obsessed with her. So it's really cute. It's not really like femdom necessarily, but he's definitely more submissive to her. But yeah, it's not like preferential treatment where it's like very blatant. I wrote in my review that it was a better, hotter version of a Hallmark movie. So it gave me like Hallmark vibes, like, you know, I don't know. I actually don't watch that much Hallmark, but that's how I felt when I was reading it. But it's very smutty and the cover does not do it justice. It's not necessarily a bad cover. it's just the cover makes you think you're going to be reading something super innocent. And then there's like Carter on his knees giving pretty oral, like while her coworkers walk by outside the door. So it's definitely spicy. There is the death of a pet in the book. So spoiler, but I know that it a lot of people don't want to be surprised by that. It is not a major necessarily point of the book, but it does happen. So I still highly recommend it. That kind of stuff doesn't super bother me. So, I mean, it's sad, but like, it's a footnote and it does happen. That's reality. Pets do pass away. So I don't know. I'm not going to get into that right now. I'm back to monsters though. I really should have put this in like some sort of order in terms of subgenre or other tropes. So here we have another book I've mentioned a couple times, Skin by Avida Vice. And that is A-V-E-D-A, Vice, V-I-C-E. This is a novella. I have not yet read the rest of the series, not because it wasn't a good book, but because at the time, Skin was free, and I picked it up, and then the rest of the series you had to pay money for. It wasn't on KU, and I was just like, there's so many books on KU I could be reading. So I just never picked it up, but I think I will because I keep talking about it. And I can't even mention the rest of the series because I haven't fucking read it. I love this book, though, because both the hero and the heroine are monsters, which you don't read that often. So we have Harbinger. I think it's Harbinger. And she is a banshee who can't touch anybody. But I don't remember what her power is in terms of like going, why she's out in the world, because really the book just focuses on them. Their relationship after like this incident, but she shows up to a job. She has her bodyguard with her. Her bodyguard's name is Jasper. He is a gargoyle. And Harbinger always wears gloves. She can't touch anybody. If she makes physical contact with somebody skin to skin, that's the title, she will be able to feel their emotions. And it's just like very distracting to her. It lasts a really long time. I think like with distance, it can go away. But like she would always be able to tell how somebody was feeling. And to her, it kind of feels like a violation of their privacy. It overwhelms her like really badly. It makes it really hard for her to function. So she is always just like completely dressed up. And she shows up at this job. And I think her power also involves like being able to like touch objects and sense things. She takes off her gloves. And it ends up being an ambush. Jasper wraps himself around her, protects her, but in the process makes contact with her skin. So he touches her. And unfortunately, now she knows that he's fucking madly in love with her and wants to fuck her into next Tuesday. And she can like feel his arousal for her. And so the rest of the little novella is like them working that out. And she's like, I know what you're feeling. And he's like, oh no. So it's awkward for both of them, but it ends up with like some really fucking hot sex because she can feel like him coming basically. Like she can feel that as well. So she gets to come herself and like also through him. And then I think some of her emotion also can bounce back to him. So like, it's just like everything is like extra ramped up, but it was really hot. And I definitely need to finish the rest of the series. Okay. That's just so sweet. He's like this big ass grumpy little gargoyle. And it turns out like he's just been harboring this massive crush on her. So cute. Okay, so we're going to stick with the paranormal fantasy monster situation for one more book. And I'm going to tell you about the book Magpies in Mayhem by Elsie Winters. I love this series. The final book in the series is coming out soon, actually. And it is about like a grim reaper. And I fucking love books about death and grim reapers and like grumpy assholes like finding love. So I'm very excited. This book is about, again, a female quote unquote monster. I consider this kind of monster light. Sydney is a shifter. So she can shift into a magpie, which is a type of bird. And we meet her in the first book in the series, Leviathan Song, which I also highly recommend, but it is not a work fucking book. So I didn't mention it here. And she's the heroine of that book's best friend. And she spends a lot of the book, every time she gets spooked, she just like turns into her bird self and her clothes like fall off her and she hates it. She thinks it's like super embarrassing. because then she's a fucking bird. And she considers herself like a badass bitch. She isn't scared of anybody. She loves to have fun. She's just a heroine who's down for a good time, like, all the time. And, yeah, I just really enjoyed her character. I thought it was a nice shakeup from a lot of the monster romance heroines who are kind of, like, just going with the flow with the monsters. And in this case, you have Sydney, who's kind of like a force of nature. And in the first book, at the end of the first book, she shows up to that book's hero, Leviathan's apartment, and meets his roommate, whose name is Jordan. And she actually knows Jordan from when they were children. Only when they were children, Jordan was not a vampire, and now he is. And he doesn't want anybody from his previous life to know anything about him being a vampire. He was turned against his will. So there's, you know, some, like, talk of this, like, assault that happens to him that ends with him being a vampire. He hates being a vampire. He is filled with self-loathing. He wants, like, nothing to do with it. If he could go back in time and obviously not become a vampire, he would. So he doesn't want to be friends with Sydney. All she does is kind of remind him of what his life could have been. And her brothers actually used to be his best friends. And he cut everybody off the minute he became a vampire. So there's a lot of, like, trauma related to that. But they end up having to work together to keep a dragon egg or a dragon alive. It's like a supernatural item, this dragon egg. Lots of people want it. The dragon bonds to Sydney, though. But Jordan's the only person who can, like, handle it safely because of his powers. Whatever his powers were before he became a vampire, he's able to kind of, like, control this dragon. And he doesn't get, like, burned by it and stuff. So they're forced to work together. There's some suspense in there, too, as people are, like, trying to steal this dragon and return it to, like, the black market from whence it came or something like that. So, yeah. But I loved it because you have, like, the sunshiny Sydney who is just trying to figure out what happened to, like, the boy she used to know and how she can get him back. And so, but then you have him who is just grumpy as all get out for good reason. I mean, he's a fucking immortal creature that he didn't want or sign up to be. So, yeah. That's my final monster one. On to my actual final recommendation, though, is The Sunny Side by Lily Morton. I love Lily Morton books so much. She can do no wrong. They are flawless. And this book is book one of her new series of a modeling agency. So every book is going to be about a model or somebody working for the agency or both. And in this case, we have Jonas. Jonas owns the modeling agency. There's a lot of J names. Did you notice that? I had, like, a Jasper, a Jordan, a Jonas. Isn't there another? There's another Jasper? Two Jaspers? Holy shit. Okay. Anyways, sorry. Jonas owns the modeling agency, and it's a very good modeling agency. He's one of, he poaches a lot of models because he treats them really well. He pays them fair wages. He doesn't stand for any sort of, like, sexual assault. I mean, not that people are necessarily getting assaulted every single day, but he's very, very strict about the way his models are treated, and he demands that they're respected, which is not always the case in the modeling world. So he's a really good guy, obviously. And Dean is one of his models. Dean, we have met in some of Lily Morton's other books, and we knew him as kind of like an airhead who was literally, he comes off the page as unintelligent, as flighty. He doesn't understand most things, but it turns out that when she wrote this book about him, that Dean has actually been self-medicating with copious amounts of marijuana. So he has been smoking pot since he was like 12 or 13. His home life was awful. He was kind of pushed into modeling to make money. He has a learning disability that no one ever took seriously. His family called him stupid and just generally accepted that he was an idiot and never tried to, like, get him help for that. And so he has only just become sober and is kind of, I don't know, taking care of himself more, getting more sleep, and taking his job more seriously. And so he, you know, part of the book is, like, his journey of self-discovery and self-improvement and understanding that, you know, that his learning disability doesn't define him. And he's also just, he's really good at his job and he's really good at reading people. So he might not be able to read, like actually read very well. I can't remember what his learning disability is. I think it was dyslexia. It's possible he had multiple, but it's been a little bit since I read it. So he really can't read. He needs somebody else to read his contracts for him. But he can read people so well. And he reads Jonas so well. And he has a huge crush on Jonas. And he has never kept that a secret. But Jonas, obviously, as his boss, has firmly put him in like the do not touch box. But Jonas, like now over the course of this like summer, Jonas and him and Dean continuously are thrust together in various situations until Jonas can no longer deny his feelings for Dean. And he is so offended on Dean's behalf that Dean was ever treated that way or that anybody thinks Dean is stupid. And he's like his greatest defender. And yeah, it's just, it's a really sweet book. So I don't know. I love the idea of like this modeling agency too and getting this kind of like look behind the scenes. I don't know how accurate it is, but I like to pretend that when I'm reading a book where one of the characters has like a career that I'm getting like a firsthand look at how that career works, even though likely I'm not. But if an author has done any sort of like genuine research, obviously it can't be totally realistic because you wouldn't want a modeling agency boss to be doing anything with a client. But I like to think that now I know everything, you know? I'm learning constantly from my books, even if it's wrong. Nobody tell me. But anyway, so that is the end of Don't Fuck at Work recommendations. I would love to know if you have any, because I wouldn't have said that I'm drawn to workplace romances, but my Goodreads shelf of like 30-something books would tell you that I'm a liar. So I don't know. Isn't that fun? Like, I'm always like, I'm not super into that trope. And I look at my Goodreads shelf and I'm like, motherfucker, it's like all, like one of my biggest shelves. So yeah. Again, fuck at work if you want. If your boss is really hot, like I'm not going to stop you, but I'm probably going to recommend you have a backup plan, because that sounds like a terrible long-term plan for keeping your job unless you marry your boss. So just make sure that is your end game. Okay. I'm really hoping that Michaela is on the mend soon, because again, talking to myself on a repeat is not that exciting for me. I like when there's somebody else on the other side insulting me. That's my kink. So, but yeah, next week we will have a special guest coming on to talk monster romances with me. Everyone knows I am incredibly passionate about monster romances, so that is sure to be a wonderful episode. And yeah, Michaela is actually reading A Court of Thorns and Roses right now, the whole series. She has flown through it while she has not left her bed. And that means I need to start reading it so we can break that down for you guys, because I've only ever read books 1 and 2, and I remember nothing about them. So, like, literally, I did not retain any information about those books, so. Have a wonderful rest of your Thursday or whatever day it is when you're listening to this. And I look forward to hearing from you guys. Shoot me a DM at upthesmutpod or romantically_inclined. If you have any episode suggestions, we'd love to hear them. If you have any compliments or insults, we would probably like to hear them. I'll decide when I hear it. Cool. Well, stay slutty, stay smutty, and read whatever the fuck you want, and fuck your boss. Bye.